with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! About the absence on Friday, but what it was is I had a meeting Friday, but it went longer than I anticipated. I walked in the door, probably about a little bit after six, and had no time to do it. And I won't get behind them. Generally speaking, I will not get behind the microphone if I haven't had an opportunity to do some prep and have some sense of what's going on in the world. And since I've been at it from about 7 a.m. till about 6 p.m. on Friday, I was clueless. And I don't think you deserve being subjected to cluelessness. Lord knows there's enough of that in the right wing nutosphere. You don't need it coming from me. Now, I'm sure Wingnuts would say that, well, you know, he's clueless every night, but we know that's not true. I do, however, make the occasional mistake. And one of the beauties of this program, and one of the beauties of not being a drug-addled right-winger who can't admit mistakes, is the ability to be corrected and thereby to learn. So in light of the fact that this is indeed Moran Monday, I nominate me. And you'll see why. It's about 3 minutes past the hour, and let me go to an email here so you can figure this out. Well, there's nothing to figure out. It becomes abundantly clear. I got an email from our buddy Tosh. And it concerns a conversation we had on air, I guess it was last week sometime, about the Ship of the Damned, the SS St. Louis, as a matter of fact. Tosh wrote in and he said, Bob, I'm pretty sure that you and Jim, because this was a conversation with Jim about the nature of anti-Semitism in this country and various other racial bigotries as well. I'm pretty sure that you and Jim have the story of the FDR versus the Jews and the SS St. Louis skewed to favor right-wing framing. Break my heart. It wasn't intentional. Sadly, I submit that you've bought right-wing revisionism about FDR. You might try the reverse revisionist book, Saving the Jews. The steamship company took money from their passengers to bribe, we're talking about the SS St. Louis. And these are facts. The steamship company took money from their passengers to bribe Cuban officials, but the official didn't stay bribed, though the company kept the money. The St. Louis set sail to Cuba against the wishes of the Joint, i.e. the Joint Committee of Jewish Interest Groups trying to save European refugees at the time. The Joint was afraid that this publicity stunt would backfire, cutting off all immigration. They were working toward a lower profile approach that could have accommodated all immigrants, but the steamship line had other plans. As a matter of fact, 72% of the passengers were saved despite being in the limelight and getting ripped off by the steamship company. The issue of keeping a low profile scuttled efforts to transship people through Puerto Rico and the United States Virgin Islands. The number of incoming temporary residents raised concerns from the nativists and the equivalent to today's villagers, which shut that avenue down. It is true that immigration was very limited with strict quotas on a country-by-country basis and pretty stiff likely public charge restrictions. All of these restrictions were well-established law before FDR ever took office, and had huge right-wing nativist support. Remember, the right wing was the home of nativism long before SB 1070 was ever enacted by that disgusting right-wing neo-Nazi skinhead, practically Russell Pierce in Arizona. All of these restrictions were well-established law before FDR took office and had huge right-wing nativist support, as Tosh says. The law was enacted in 1924. Oh, who was president then? The comparison between U.S. responses and who controlled the Congress then? The comparison between U.S. responses to the Jewish orphans in Antwerp and the Blitz-based plans to send British kids, blonde hair, blue eyes, to the U.S. is especially striking. Lots of people offered to take British kids but opposed allowing Jewish kids in. It wasn't the administration that restricted immigration. It was the people, particularly conservatives, in part driven by concerns about job competition. Oh, where have we heard that before? In Paper Walls, which was recommended by a well-regarded local history teacher who buys this revisionism, you barely get 20 pages into the books before you find the FDR administration plotting and planning to improve Jewish immigration, to make it easier for Central European Jewish emigres to get in. The first, most telling thing is that they consolidated and redirected the quotas so the maximum number of people could qualify from countries outside the reach of Hitler. Each time Hitler consumed another country, FDR's team moved the quotas to where the refugees needed the slots. Additionally, they pushed very hard to get the consular officers to ease up on LPC clause, likely public charge, to allow Jews to qualify for immigration. At the time, these officers were very conservative, very racist, and very much beyond presidential, secretarial, or congressional control. Later, there was plenty of work done trying to find safe places for Jewish immigrants. In fact, there was a plan to settle Jewish refugees in then vastly underpopulated Alaskan territory, which made good progress until the territorial governor filed a lawsuit contesting the plan as making Alaska different from other states and territories. Then once the shooting started, standing U.S. laws pretty much ended most immigration due to U.S. neutrality laws and German U-boats. Then again, getting sunk in the North Atlantic is a surer death penalty than even the camps. Remember, FDR appointed the first Jew to a non-financial cabinet position, Henry Morgenthau, who was a longtime personal friend and Hyde Park neighbor of the president. He also appointed the second Jewish member of the Supreme Court. What really bothers me about this revisionism, Bob, is that the very people who tried in the 1930s to keep Jews out of America, the right wing, are today trying to separate Jews out of the Democratic coalition because not enough European Jewish refugees were admitted. It wasn't because of FDR antipathy. It was a combination of the nativists, right-wing, DAR, GAR, Knights of Columbus, KKK, that opposed entry. And I really appreciate getting schooled on something like that because I don't like making howling errors, especially on something like that. So thank you very kindly, Tosh. It is, as I noted, it is Moran Monday, right? Yeah. So where's our Calliope? There's our Calliope with a little nod of the head to Anderson Cooper. That's the Swiss pronunciation of Calliope, Calliope, right? Yes. It is Moran Monday on the horn. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your eyes. Moran Monday is here again. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this program is the program you need for telling the Morans one from another. Vicious Morans, hateful Morans, just plain stupid Morans, but every last one of them sharing the common bond of being right-wing Morans. Moran Monday is here again. For nothing more than less than 5 cents per hour of programming, you too can step behind this thin canvas cybernetic wall that veils you away from the Morans. You will not believe your eyes nor your ears. Mostly ears, because it is, after all, radio. It is Moran Monday on the horn, and no one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Step right up. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Head for the hills. You'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Now, I have to admit that I'm biased. So I'm going to start out the bidding on tonight's Moran Monday with a nomination from here, sort of, how you say, close to home. Yeah. By close to home, of course, I mean politically close to home. Big things happened over the weekend. the bigots in the right wing shut down the DREAM Act because they said it would give amnesty to illegal aliens, when in fact it would have opened the doors for legal and honorable service by people brought to America, not necessarily of their own free will, because they were children and too little to be able to do otherwise. It would open the door to them to military service, to college educations, to a life of something other than picking lettuce and swabbing toilets, working out of sight and out of mind in the backs of restaurants and such like as that. But the right wing of the Senate killed that. However, they did not manage to kill, don't ask, don't tell, the repeal thereof. No, it was a great day. It was a great day in American history when that bit of institutionalized bigotry, don't ask, don't tell, was repealed. It has not been signed by the president yet that I know of, but it will be. People did their duty in getting this hateful, heinous piece of legislation repealed. Ron Wyden, for instance, a senator from Oregon, suffering from prostate cancer. Ron Wyden was present in the Senate to cast his vote to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and afford honor and dignity to literally thousands of service personnel serving in our military. Ron Wyden, with cancer, was there. Who wasn't? Well, like I said, this is a Moran Monday story that is close to home for me. Joe Manchin, my senator, wasn't. Joe Manchin was weighed in the balance on Saturday and was found wanting. Joe Manchin, if you can imagine, sounding much more like a Republican than any sort of Democrat, Joe Manchin complained that, gosh, he really wanted to be there for those crucial, critical, historic votes, but he had a party to attend. Really? That was the excuse. Not even the dog ate my appointment calendar and I didn't remember, or it just slipped my mind, or I had to do my hair. He has fabulous hair, by the way. No, none of that. Joe had a party to go to. Now, Joe's office put out press releases saying that he opposed both measures. On the one hand, he opposed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and he also opposed the DREAM Act. Because, you see, he represents a state that has a significant percentage, though by no means is it overwhelming, I would hope, of bigots and racists and homophobes. So he dodged the vote in favor of a party. A Christmas party that he said had been scheduled for a year and he just couldn't get out of it. Well, our misbegotten war in Afghanistan has been scheduled for, 9 years now. And there are thousands upon thousands of American service personnel who just can't get out of that either, who would really love to have had a party to go to. I'm sure Senator Wyden would rather not have prostate cancer, but he couldn't get out of that by pleading he had a party to go to. This is one of those moments that gives me no real joy. But before the election, I penned an op-ed, and it was run in the Charleston Gazette, the state's paper of record, so to speak. And I argued that the two principal candidates for the office namely Joe Manchin and John Racy, that neither one of them were fit to serve in the Senate of the United States and to replace the lifetime of service that had been rendered by Robert C. Byrd. Agree with him or disagree with him on any number of issues, and I disagreed with him plenty. One could not challenge his dedication to the Senate. When the Affordable Care Act was being voted upon in the Senate, an ill and soon to be dead Robert Byrd made his way to the Senate to cast his vote. He could have stayed home. But he understood that opposing or being in favor of a bill, one is in the Senate for one's ability to vote upon it. That is lost on a coward like Joe Manchin. And that's the word we have to use, cowardice. If I'd have been there, I sure would have voted against it. Well, okay, that's great. You're wrong on two significant historical pieces of legislation. You are found on the wrong side of history. But even then, couldn't show up to do his duty. Because he had a party. Ron Wyden's surgery on his prostate was scheduled for today. That's nothing easy to go into. It is a brutal surgery of its sort. Of any sort. His surgery was scheduled for today, and yet on Saturday, there he was in the Senate of the United States doing his duty as he understood it. The best thing to be said actually came from a Republican. A spokesman named Brian Walsh for the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee said, perhaps in Joe Manchin's world, today was a win-win. Not only was he able to skip work and party, but he was also able to avoid voting on two very sensitive issues. For a senator who has only been on the job a few weeks, Manchin's absence today and the apparent lack of seriousness with which he takes the job he was elected to do speaks volumes. I don't like agreeing with Republicans. But in this case, what choice have I? I'm so ashamed. I'm so ashamed. It's just embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm embarrassed. And I don't know where we're going to find the person, but now would be a great time to start looking. We need a progressive liberal, I prefer the word liberal, candidate to run against Joe in 2012 in the primary. You know I don't believe in primarying incumbent presidents unless they're Republicans. But I do believe in primarying bad legislators. So, do you remember, well, maybe you don't, but I heard a lot of it in the days and weeks and months leading up to the election. Well, we got to elect Joe Manchin because he'll help us preserve our majority in the Senate. Hot damn! Not so much. Not so much. I mean, there was the Dream Act and there was Don't Ask, Don't Tell. critical pieces of legislation that had to do with the Democratic agenda. And Joe was nowhere to be found. How's that whole gonna help preserve the Democratic majority thingy working out now, moderates? Yeah, me neither. But we need a candidate. I don't know who that candidate would be. We need a candidate in this state who will run against Joe Manchin in the Democratic primary in May of 2012, and we can't find that person soon enough. But I don't even know if there's any movement along those lines. I'm sure that in 2012, if she's not running for governor, maybe Shelley Moore Capito, Republican from West Virginia's 2nd District, I'm sure she'd like to run against Joe, again, if she's not running for governor. But that's just another Republican. That's a Republican versus a Dino. Republican wannabe. That's no help. See, that's that lesson we keep having a hard time getting, is that the time to start working in earnest on an election is the day after the last one ends. We don't quite have that down yet. But I'll let you know if anybody crops up, because God knows I'll be thrilled to death if they do. It's 22 minutes past the hour. Let's go ahead and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? I hear me. Hello?
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 Juanita.
Hey, welcome to the program.
I was listening online. I didn't know you were going to...
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You've turned it down, right?
Wait a minute. Okay.
Okay, because I confuse me.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I'm just glad to hear from you. It's been so long.
Well, the election hit me kind of goofy. Maybe.
Took the wind all out of your sails?
I don't know how to describe it. Yeah, that was one thing. But anyway, I wanted to say Feliz Navidad.
And to you as well.
And also, if I'm pronouncing it right,
Joyeux Noel.
Joyeux Noel, okay. Now I'm in trouble with O'Brien.
Why is that?
Because I didn't say Merry Christmas.
Oh dear, yes.
Didn't you know he's got that up again?
Oh, geez.
Anyway, happy holidays to
you. Let's see, what is it in German? Fröhliche Weihnacht?
You know what? I don't know. Gosh, I don't know, really. That's, wow. I knew Silent Night was written in German, but I didn't know that. Anyhow, how you doing, Bob?
Getting by, trying to stay warm, burning a lot of propane.
We have a lot of, we're having a lot of cold down here now, finally. It went from one extreme to the other, and it's about going to, we had like 28 last week, which is really...
No, that's brutal for y'all.
Yeah, it is for the strawberries and for the citrus, what's left of citrus. And people didn't want them to run the water because of flooding on other people's property and all kind of stuff, you know. Yin for yin.
Nasty. So were they sweating the orange crop?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're out there picking the fruit, you know, because oranges, citrus is not like a lot of fruits. It doesn't rot after you pick it. It gets rotten. And if it freezes, it gets rotten fast. And it's, they mostly use it for juice. Because, you know, by the time...
Well, that's the last thing Rick Scott needs, because it's not starting out well for him, is it?
I don't know, Bob. We're like you. We're third rate whatever. I don't know. We really got it socked to us this time down here in Florida.
Oh, yeah. No, you got a hurting put on you.
We got Jeb Bush's flunky. We've got Adam Putnam for the for Secretary of Agriculture. We got another Republican to take Adam Putnam's place. I don't even know who they are. I thought we had a good, really good person from where I am. She's been in public office for quite a while, and now she's like a director of elections. And I never even got one advertisement or even saw one for her.
Probably didn't have the money.
Probably not. And but anyway, I saw your ex-governor presiding over the Senate one day. I think it was a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, dear. Joe? Really?
Yeah, he was up there. He looked like he didn't know what to do because some of the stuff that the Democrats were saying, you know, the liberal Democrats.
Yeah. Mostly when you stand up there, you say without objection a lot, I think.
But he, you know, he looked like so sweet when those miners, you know, got killed. He was just right there with them. But he sure looked out of place up there in that chair.
Oh, like in a punch bowl. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. But that's amazing. That's wonderful that the Republicans said that about him. He's better watch his self.
Well,
what a contrast between him and Ron Wyden.
It's amazing, isn't it? And
yes,
you know, there were the Republicans mentioning Ron Wyden and talking about his dedication. You know, and he's arguably a liberal Democrat. It must have.
You brought up a lot of them yourself.
It must have come nigh to making that Walsh fella's head explode.
But anyway, I don't know. It's just the whole situation, Bob, and I just I feel like I think it's kind of like, you know, with kids that want to be part of the big crowd, the bullies, and so forth. And they put down their real friends. And that's the way I feel like we've been done. But maybe it'll work out for the best.
Oh, you know, I hope so, Juanita. But I got to tell you, I'm in a pretty dark place.
Well, let me tell you. it's just something that, I don't know. And it took us by surprise how bad it got all of a sudden to me.
Well, I think a lot of people had underplayed how bad it was going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of hoping against hope.
I can't see anything good coming out of that tax cut thing.
Nothing good will. And especially the little stealth assault on Social Security.
Oh, yeah. A constant one. And, but you know, I have some friends, they're more friends of my son than, they've got a daughter that, she's in jail right now for being associating and living with, what's one of those people from Mexico?
Oh, an undocumented immigrant?
No. The other one. Lieutenants. I don't want to talk about it too much, but
I don't.
A big arrest down here, and she's got $500,000
bail.
Person she's living with, I don't think they have a bail because they're were armed, had some armed stuff involved. But the other biggies have like either $1 million bail or $1.5 million, but they've got great lawyers, and this poor girl, she's got none. They've assigned her five so far, she can't get any help from legal aid.
Well, she's gotta have access to a public defender if there's a criminal charge. Well, then again, it's Florida.
They've five of them have dropped, she's on her fifth one. They're dropping out on her.
Well, heaven's sakes, why?
I don't know. Maybe they're scared. I have no idea why. But what do people do? Because I know they're usually worse on the woman than they are on the men. I mean,
yeah.
They've got great lawyers. But her family can't afford to help her with that kind of a bail. And I just, I don't know. It's a mess. But the sheriff is really, he's already arrested the guy that wrote the pedophile book.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
You heard about that?
Yeah.
Sent him up to Colorado to trick him and get his book, send it to a judge down here who authorized him to be arrested. Also, they've got the latest thing that I read in the paper over the Internet, of course, was that they've arrested a lot of these guys. You know, they put an ad in Craigslist about wanting someone that wants to help out an adult. You know, they didn't say the word sex, but anyway, they're arresting them for wanting sex with a minor. Just like that TV show.
Yep, yep.
And then another thing he's involved with, they call a bunch of prostitutes. And he's just on the job, but they can't patrol our neighborhoods. You know, they just can't do it, Bob.
No, well, but right, because there's, what, bigger fish to fry?
Yeah, and he's on national news now, too, for that that pedophile guy. But, I mean, I know those things aren't right, Bob. But you know what I've come to the conclusion? You know how they're making money on jails.
Yeah, but
they wouldn't care if every one of us were in jail, because they got plenty more slaves where we came from, plenty more serfs where we came from. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
They don't care. They don't care if you live or if you die. And before I quit, I'm gonna quit rambling on that. But I called Adam Grayson's office because that was the one that kind of floored me. They couldn't wait to announce that he had lost. And because the area he's from, I used to live there in Orlando, and it's very, very right-wing. Of course, I can't say much different from where I live now either. But we do let a few out, you know, a few Democrats out once in a while. But anyway, of course, they're not all really Democrats. They're kind of like, you know, the Joe Manchin.
Yeah, well.
We got a lot of Joe Manchins, as you know well, in the year 2000. Manchin judges. And that would be a good name instead of like you're doing a Manchin or a Manchinite. You're a Manchinite.
Right. Or the legislating from the, you know, legislation, courage from the mansion.
Yeah, which is nothing. But now, didn't he vote one time against Don't Ask, Don't Tell?
Yeah, when the Defense Appropriations Bill came up and had Don't Ask, Don't Tell in it.
Oh, okay.
He voted against it.
Yeah, and he was the only Democrat that voted
right
against it, I believe.
Right.
And how does he feel about all these other things, about helping the people out from New York City, that not just people from New York City, but people from all over the country?
Oh, the 9/11 first responders bill?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if he's, I haven't read a position from him on it. But I have a feeling if we just sort of keep a running tally of things that he votes with the Democrats on and things that he doesn't, it's not going to be a pretty picture, Juanita.
Well, you know what? I heard, this was before they said they weren't going to do any more, what do you call it, that pork, it's called something else?
Earmarks.
Yeah, earmarks. And, of course, they're going to do the ones they did before they said they were going to not do those. Okay? Got me?
Yeah, but, well, yeah.
Anyway.
They were for them before, they were against them before they were for them or something like
this
that?
This is what I heard. This was what I heard. They were going to really give him some promises of some big bucks if he would turn Republican after he gets, after his, you know.
Oh, that, yeah, I mean, it's like watching, it's like reading about, you know, what happened up in that high mountain place. They were going to give him the world and all its dominions, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. But, anyways, I don't know. My mind's kind of wandering now, Bob. I've had big-time I mean, worse than ever, computer problems. I've lost a lot of my emails. And,
oh, dear.
And, but my son worked on it for about 15 hours one day, and he's got it going now, where, you know. But, you know, people think that's an easy job.
No.
I tell you, it will drive you out of your skull. Just what I do with it. Just what I do with it sometime, it drives me batty. And then you have to contend with all this other stuff with Medicare. You know, now they're giving like you a month and a half to decide. I don't know what these people do that don't have their wits about them. You know, don't have anybody to help them. I'm talking about people, you know, that are on Medicare and they don't know. They have to take every kind of baloney that's handed to them. I'm able to fight somewhat, but, you know, sometimes you get tired of fighting all the time, and you just don't.
You get exhausted.
But there's so much, huh?
You get exhausted.
You do, and it was like working on a computer. It's just like all these jobs, like they say, oh, secretary job, you know, that's no problem. Well, I've had to wash walls and clean windows and carry heavy loads and all, but they don't think you have to do that. You just sit around on your little twinkle toes and oh, typing, you know, is not bad. But we have been sold a bill of goods.
Well, or, you know, to work with another analogy, we have had our birthright traded for a cold bowl of porridge.
There you go, Bob. You said it. That's so well. That is wonderful. That's great analogy. And, yeah, and we do. And we do. Because you want to get by. You want to survive. And I think about, it's really coming to me more so now than ever. That, like way back when they had the right to work law, which, you know, we have it down here. You probably have it up there.
Actually, we're not a right to work state in West Virginia. And that's, that's the reason that, there's still some, organized labor strength in this state.
Well, we got some organized down here, but it's still right to work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go out on strike, the company can hire somebody. I know people that have worked and said, well, they don't want to work, I'll work. And they have no idea. People don't have any idea what the unions have done for this country. And that's being taken away. I'm sorry to be on the downswing, but.
No, that's, well, listen, you know, sometimes, Juanita, many times you are an absolute ray of light on this program. But. To be so falsely, it's dishonest. And you know what? I would think that there was you are a significant barometer of the moral validity of this program. And you know when Juanita's calling it, you know, when you're calling it this way, I think it's pretty safe. It's pretty safe that we can run to the bank.
You think so?
Yeah, and don't feel bad about the computers driving y'all nuts, because you know this is a computer based program. And
I know. I told my son about, you know, now I can't even think of his name that used to have the show on.
Peter.
Yeah, Peter, and I think about he's working in that. He's working in that.
And yes.
Is he? Did he get any better? Was he sick?
I think he did get he got some better.
I think about that, you know, and I think people don't realize what people go through because they think, well, that's just something easy. It's one of the hardest things in the world to do.
No, some of it's just miserable.
In so many ways. And it's not just the technical part of it. A lot of it is the people. People don't understand. They think, you can go zip, 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 and that's it. But anyway, my hat's off. I want to honor all the working people. I had my bank, they charged me $70 overdraft because an unauthorized payment was sent in, and I had two checks for about $35, and they were charged me $70. And I was having to file it against that, and I finally did get it straightened out. It took a while, but having trouble with your computer doesn't help.
Oh, no.
And because it is an aid in a lot of ways. And I told him, I said, when I got one that was really nice about it, I told him, I said, you know, I said, I'm on Social Security, but I said, I know as bad off as people are who have no job at all. And, you know, and I can relate to that. I would be out of jobs periodically before I ever got on Social Security and not know where I was going to be hired, because I was like blacklisted. And I found out in a lot of places, the place I was blacklisted from was on just about everything else around here. And it was really hard to find anything. And you think, well, I'm never going to find a job. And this was back in the good old Reagan days and Bush senior days and all that kind of stuff. You know. But anyway. But we have got, our country's got to do some changing. We've got to repent for all the stuff we've done in the past and are doing now.
Yeah, see, the right wing likes to, especially the religion industry one, it likes to holler, we've got, you know, is it from Isaiah where that verse comes from, where if my people, which are called by my name, will turn away from their evil ways and speak money, you know what I'm talking about.
But
they always use that for, you know.
Speak money, no.
Right, well, but the right wing always uses that, Juanita, as an excuse for hating on gay people. But
they twist it around, Bob. That's one of the most wonderful verses to me. It says, if my people who are called by my name, if my people, not those people, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and turn from their wicked ways, he shall come and heal the land. But see, they think they don't think they have wicked ways. So they twisted that all around. They twisted a lot of stuff around about Jesus. You know, Jenk had a really good one I heard the other day that he said, you know, he's like you, he reads the Bible, even though he calls himself an atheist. You know, he was raised Islam, and he just said one day, this is a bunch of nonsense. But he reads the Bible. He said, I would recommend anybody to read the Bible. He said, it's very interesting. And he said, he realizes that a lot of these people that call themselves Christian, they don't really know what's in the Bible. And he was talking about Bill O'Brien, whatever his name is, O'Brien, said that, you know, God helps those who help themselves. And Jenk said, that's not in the Bible.
Nope.
And you know, that's what I talked about tradition one time with you. We're so inundated and believe that a lot of these things are godly, and they're not. They're not from the Bible. And I have come to the conclusion for myself, this is what has worked out for me, is that God helps those who can't help themselves.
Well, that's kind of what the book says.
Yeah.
And it implores followers, there's tons of, references in the law portion of the Old Testament telling people how to treat poor people and not to be, you know, not to be just, well, not to behave like Republicans.
I forget what who called in, but I've got it. I've got that marked. I've got that verse marked in Ezekiel about, the cause of why God was displeased with Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
It was not gays.
No, it was because they were inhospitable.
Yeah, and they had no regard for the poor people. These people hate poor people. And, you know, we've got Bush as what's his name? Rush.
Oh, yeah,
says, we've got no morals. All we want is power. we're just so immoral. We've got
whenever that unrepentant junkie begins talking about poor folks, he always mocks them by saying the pure, my friends, the pure.
Yeah.
Right.
Shame on him.
Yeah.
I wish the ghost of Christmas present and all that stuff would come to haunt him.
Well, and speaking of speaking of things along that line, it's a little bit of news from the world of sport, Juanita. But Robert Kraft owns the New England Patriots, and
yeah.
So he threw a big party Saturday night for the crew of Sunday Night Football on NBC.
Oh, okay.
And guess who else he invited?
Ted Nugent.
Flush.
Oh God.
And sat him right down next to Dan Patrick.
Well, not as bad as the other.
Well, I think Kraft is quietly lobbying for Flush to have a job on NBC Sunday Night Football.
Oh gee.
And that's remember he got a job on ESPN and he kept it just until he couldn't. You know, you can't keep a Klansman away from his robes. And sooner, and it wasn't good. It didn't take very long before Flush was hollering about, quarterback for the Eagle, Donovan McNabb.
Yeah.
Saying that Donovan McNabb was an affirmative action quarterback.
Yeah.
Oy.
Well, did you hear about Al Sharpton went to the FCC?
Yes. Oh, and the right wing is having absolutely having kittens with crocheted tails over it too.
Well, you know, it's like he said, whether they do any, you know, he said he would love to have hearings, you know, and whoever could explain all of that, if it's Rush, which you would doubt that, because he would get the, Civil Liberties Union to help him.
Yeah.
But who cares? I mean, it's just that's the way I felt about Bush and Cheney. Let them get up and talk in public and be under oath and answer.
Yeah, it's that under oath thing that creates the problem.
But instead, what are we going to look forward to? UC or whatever his name is from California is going to have all these hearings. He's going to find something out about Obama.
Ouch.
You heard about that.
Yeah, Daryl Issa. Yeah.
Issa.
He's such a pig. Such a pig.
Is. And did you know he's the richest congressman?
Not surprising. He's also, he was also at one point indicted but not convicted for a felony scam.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and his brother, I believe. And also, you know who who's the richest in the Senate is Kerry.
Well, that's only because
I don't know if that includes his wife.
That's only because of Teresa, right?
You think? Yeah. Anyway, well, listen, I'm gonna let you go.
Well, I'm glad your computer's not completely sicked out, but I saw
it's been a lot better now. I've got a little more space on it.
Okay, and you know, just like I said in that email to you the other night, you know, we worry when we don't hear from folks. This is family, after all. This isn't some commercial enterprise.
Did you get the email I sent you about the Medicaid, about the if you can't have your teeth fixed, you can have them pulled, but you can't get any false teeth?
Right. No false teeth, no implants, but we can yank them for you.
I mean, you know, gee whiz. But, and you heard about that Arizona governor?
Which part? Yeah, she set her own death panels up. Right.
Yeah. And somebody questioned her about it.
Oh, she didn't like that.
Well, they need to go to the U.S. government. Well, yeah, where are we going to do that?
Get the government to send it. Yeah, get the government to send us some more money.
Oh yeah, so you can.
But remember, she's a teabagger, and she don't want no government money.
But
except when she does.
We got some trips. I'll tell you, we got some real trips. But I want you to tell you this, and then I'm gonna go. Is I was gonna call in Friday, and I had a lot of things to do. Believe it or not, I have a lot of things to do. And anyway, I tuned in toward the end of the show, and I heard you and Sandra. Yeah, that was so good.
Well, I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, you caught a rerun because I was in a meeting.
Really?
I was in a meeting literally all day Friday.
Wow.
But that was Thursday's show. But hopefully we'll have a little
I didn't hear Thursday's show. But anyway, I was thought, well, I'm going to listen. And I had so much to do till I didn't get toward the end. But that was so funny. You and her are a good team.
Well, Juanita, it is good to hear from you, dear. And you have yourself a good evening.
You too.
All right.
At least
knock
it off.
Joyeux Noël.
Okay.
Bye now.
Night-night.
And that is Juanita calling from Central Florida. Haven't heard from her in a long time, and now we know why. Isn't it hell when your computer goes sideways? And if you don't have the wherewithal to fix it, you're in a real spot. I know from experience because, if it had not been for the Beat the Swede challenge last month, we might not be on the air right now. It was getting that dire. But at least we are, and at least Juanita's back on the air. Always makes me feel better. You know, I said Thursday night that we hadn't played nearly enough Christmas music, and toward that end, Saturday's Christmas. It's Christmas. It's the holiday that the church superimposed on a wide variety of pre-existing celebrations of the solstice. I don't care if that makes the religion industry mad. It's a fact. There were solstice celebrations. It's a time of hope. You know, it's the rebirth of the sun. If you don't understand astronomy and stuff like that, and you're still having trouble, and you as a culture are still having trouble figuring out things like wheelbarrows, it's the rebirth of the sun. It means you're going to get to live to see another year, and the gods aren't angry enough to just blow the candle out. That's why it's a party. You know what I mean? So instead of those, I got a special Christmas carol, and I can't remember who sent it right offhand, but I've made sure that it stayed here because H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu universe strikes a chord with a lot of people. So we'll take a break and come back. Light them up if you want to. A couple of lines blinking. I'll get to them upon our return. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel. It's 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. We will be right back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is, in fact, the horn. And this is the Carol of the Old Ones.
Look to the sky way up on high, there in the night, stars on a right, beyond the past, now in the past, listen while it's great, gold comes away, they will return, and when to learn, who can to fear when they are here,
they will be great, born in the rain, hopes turn to black, when they come back, in the rain, you'll find the rules, where there will be, earth goes again, stars from the body, my lady children, cold on return, season of doom, scary, 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 scary,
the rain, tear or a day, mows without end, where they stand,
give or a fool's
friend, and the rules are
again of them,
and it does again,
turn from the
front, and all in the
turn, board
on each other,
please, in a
bin, say,
here is yours, here is yours,
here is yours, here is yours,
here is yours, here is
yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours,
here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours,
here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here is yours, here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind.
Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
A short little carol, but one very, very much worth the playing. I've already had one request. It's at YouTube if you want to go find it. It's just cute. Carol of the Old Ones Sing-Along. Search that at YouTube. Carol of the Old Ones Sing-Along. And you can have a very Cthulhu Christmas if you so wish. We're ahead of ourselves a little bit. It's actually a couple of minutes before 7 p.m. here on the East Coast, and we're already into the second hour, which is a good thing, I do believe. And let's, as promised, let's go straight away to the phones. Let's see what we got going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
I have a few nominations.
Okie dokie.
Not just one. I got at least three. The first for the nomination of Moran are the opponents of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell bill that went down to defeat and who are now throwing a tantrum. How? By opposing the START bill, by opposing the START treaty.
Yeah, I saw where Senator Lindsey Grahamcracker said he was just too exhausted. Oh, he was too exhausted over the whole "Don't Ask, Don't Tell."
Man, McCain, you know, he's right behind him, you know. My second nominee is someone who wants to be president. He thinks he'd make a really good president. His name's Haley Barbour.
Oh, dear. Yeah, and his White Citizens Council out in Missouri.
Yeah.
Martin Luther King come here, and he didn't have no problem in 1962, because the White Citizens Council was keeping everything on an even keel.
Yeah, that Citizens Council, most people would call them the Klan.
It, well, that only because it was.
Yeah. And my third nomination is for the entire Republican Party in the Senate for not allowing bills like the 9/11 first responder bill and the DREAM Act to come to the floor at all for a vote.
All we wanted was an up or down vote. I seem to remember them saying that a lot once upon a time, and they got their up or down votes.
Yeah, right. Boy.
And, you know, John Kyle has always been a miserable, misanthropic, pathetic excuse for a sort of member of the human race. But he's really trying to outdo himself. First, with regard to the first, the 9/11 first responders bill that you mentioned, Susan, he said, well, what's the hurry? I'm sorry, that's Haley Barbour. What's the hurry?
Well, these guys are dying right and left.
Well, that was my thought. But now I said, well, wait a minute. Okay, so maybe we're in a hurry. But why do they need $6 billion? Well, the fact of the matter is they probably need 10. Well, what do they need? This is the direct quote. After the bill was modified by New York Senators Kirsten Gillibrand and Chuck Schumer, they cut money out of it to get some GOP support.
Why don't you? That original the original way they funded it, the Chamber of Commerce didn't like the way it hit some of their people. So the Republican Party moved in and said, "Oh no, you can't do that."
Well, now that they've modified it, John Kyle showed up on Radio Rwanda today, and he said, "This has been a moving target since day one. This is something that they came up with just to put directly on the floor of the Senate without any hearings, without any opportunities to figure out what it should be like. I have no idea how this thing would work. So they reduced it from $7 billion to $6 billion. I have no idea whether $6 billion is a reasonable figure. But the question is, who's responsible? Who's at fault? Do they have the money? Is the insurance adequate to cover it? Wasn't the previous settlement adequate? Why would they need $6 billion?
Where's this dude been? Underneath a rock?"
Well, seeing how that's kind of the phylum from whence he comes, he's a bit of a lizard. Yeah.
Cockroach is more likely.
Now, just so that we can,
top of hearings.
You know, he don't know what's in this bill. There's only one problem. When you say stuff like that, you kind of admit that you're one of those Joe Manchin-style piss-poor senators, Susan, because the bill has been made available to him since 2009. There was a hearing about it in June that he would have been entitled to attend.
Yeah.
But he just said, our hearing didn't happen. You know, basically, if he's not there, it doesn't happen.
These guys are just real pieces of work. That's why I said the entire Republican Party in the Senate. Damn you all. It's like the Dream Act. Those kids didn't ask to be brought into this country. They were babes in arms.
Yeah. And where the 9/11 bill is concerned, even former New York Republican Governor George Pataki is pointing out what a bunch of Pataki, John, what a sack of Pataki John Kyle is.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter. Folks are dying. But you know what? The rich got their tax cut, and that is all that matters. Let's go home.
Well, screw
I hate them. I despise them, Susan.
So do I. As far as I'm concerned, Congress doesn't, you know, lame duck end.
Well, you
could work over the holiday.
You mentioned the right-wing hissy over Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Well, let's remember that thing's not going to kick in for several months. So that means that the service members continue to have to lie about their basic natures for several more months. So, but anyway, you mentioned that there's a right-wing hissy, and there is. They are out front already. With a guy who is bleating about how he's being persecuted. Bless his heart, Mikey Weinstein over at the Military Religious Freedom Foundation has already publicized a statement by an Air Force Lieutenant Colonel named Stacy L. Maxey. And he has written, he wrote a letter. Here's an excerpt of it. He says that, he says, "Here's the truth. I will continue to witness to who I want, when I want, and where I want. My commitment to my God supersedes my commitment to the Department of Defense, and if officials are upset about that, then I guess they can just learn to deal with it."
Well, in that case, he needs to resign his commission.
That would seem to be the appropriate response, as far as I'm concerned.
Otherwise, what happened to the dude who refused to follow Barack Obama's orders.
Well, here's the full letter, Susan. It was published in Stars and Stripes on December the 15th. Just try to keep your gorge, keep dinner from lunch, whatever, from coming up. Just bear with me for a second. So let me see if I understand this. The Defense Department is proposing to let people who choose to live a homosexual lifestyle serve openly in the armed forces, but won't allow Christians such as myself the freedom to openly share the good news of Christ with our co-workers as the faith we've chosen requires? There's a question mark. I don't fully understand it, Susan.
Wait a minute.
No, wait. No. This is a Ginsu commercial. DOD officials plan to tell service members who have a problem with those living a homosexual lifestyle to learn to deal with it, but they are prepared to counsel and or slap Christians with paperwork if someone feels offended by our witness. Wearing sexual lifestyle choices on your sleeve is okay, but not your faith. Military chaplains who teach that homosexuality is antithetical to and incompatible with Christianity, which it is, can either muzzle their objections or leave, but gays will be permitted to parade their lifestyle choices in front of all. Bottom line, so I'm free to express myself if I'm a homosexual, but not if I'm a Christian. What disgraceful hypocrisy. Here's the truth. I will continue to witness to who I want, when I want, and where I want. My commitment to my God supersedes my commitment to the DOD, and if officials are upset about that, then I guess they can learn to deal with it. Department of Defense, more like the Department of Double Standards. So you see what the messaging's going to be, Susan?
Yeah.
The messaging will now be that gayness is a religion.
Yeah, I have to tell you, the thing that popped into my head was an image of a soldier going down a street, say in the Middle East, wearing a helmet, combat boots, and a feather boa. Because that's apparently what this dude thinks is going to happen.
I know. They'll probably replace oh, what's the name of that anthem? Something Owen. They'll probably replace that with, what was it?
It's called the Gary Owen.
Yeah, the Gary Owen. They'll probably replace that's that one, right? Yeah. They'll probably replace the Gary Owen, with Somewhere Over the Rainbow. That's what's going to happen.
I got news for you. I don't know about anybody else, but if I was going into battle, I wouldn't want to be doing it to that particular piece of music.
It's kind of about getting your ass kicked, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what Custer played when he went into the Little Bighorn.
God only knows what the halls of Montezuma will be replaced with.
Yeah. The whole thing is just a crock. You know, you got the same thing with, you know, minor variations when they were integrating the service.
Yeah, you mean the part where, you know, our good, upstanding, God-fearing white military is going to be destroyed by the mongrelization of the Corps.
Yes, we're going to mix races. Oh! We're going to actually have black men with guns in battle. They're going to run!
They're going to shoot our white butts. Yeah.
We're going to have brown people run because they're not warriors. Let me see the last Congressional Medal of Honor that Barack Obama just awarded. He's brown.
Oh, well, wasn't that the guy who had done feminized the military?
Oh, God.
I remember that story. Yeah.
Somebody who won a Congressional Medal. I mean, you know, right.
But that's what the right wing said. The military has been feminized.
I think these people have gone nuts. I really do. I think they all need a large dose of Prozac. They're crazy.
Well, you know, as David in Tennessee just noted, he said, and allowing a naturally occurring preference in sexual attraction to be put on equal footing with an effing fable about a wizard that lives in the clouds. Holy brain fart, Batman.
Chalk went up for David.
Jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin laid an egg.
Now, here's one thing that I really would like to see. As soon as Barack Obama signs the repeal of DATT, I want to also see him sign an executive order banning all prosecute all terminations of people for.
Yeah, basically an executive order staying Don't Ask, Don't Tell until it's fully implemented, or until the repeal is fully implemented.
He has his congressional mandate. There's no reason not to use an executive order now. Because the people, even if they continue to kick people out, the minute it's implemented, these people are going to turn around and join right back up again.
You know, there's one thing, it was at Netroots Nation last year when Lieutenant Dan Choi's ring was presented to Harry Reid, and he said he'd give it back when it got repealed. I think that, that ought to be something pretty special.
Yeah, I saw that, and it was cool. And, you know, it's something that, you know, these people, they're patriots, you don't go and live a lie because so you can serve the military because you think it's something to do to keep yourself occupied. You do it because you're about as patriotic as is possible to get.
Yep.
If you were kicking these people out of the military, I would never understand. These are precisely the people we want in. The ones we want to kick out are the skinheads.
Makes perfect sense to me. It really does. Susan, have yourself a wonderful evening, dear.
That's the problem. It makes sense.
You take care. We'll talk soon.
I love Agnes and Doodle and Berg and all the other kids.
I sure will. We'll talk soon.
And happy holidays, or whatever you want to call it.
Yes, happy holidays. I prefer that. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon. Quick email coming in. By the way, Lieutenant, what was his name? Francis Q. Stacy L. Maxey was our buddy Marty's nominee for Moran Monday, and I think Stacy L. Maxey has to have a very strong case. Further Moranity, Kate just dropped an email. Happy solstice to you and the Horn family. Happy solstice to you, Kate. Not only did the church steal our sacred celebrations, they screwed up their crappy fairy tales, just like in the Bible. According to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, while both male and female reindeer grow antlers in the summer each year, male reindeer drop their antlers at the beginning of winter, usually late November to mid-December. Female reindeer retain their antlers till after they give birth in the spring. Therefore, according to every historical rendition depicting Santa's reindeer, every single one of them, from Rudolph to Blitzen, had to be a girl. We should have known. Only women would be able to drag an old fat guy in a red velvet suit all around the world in one night and not get lost. Says Kate, enjoy the lunar eclipse tonight. Indeed. I think we're a little it may be too cloudy here. I'd kind of like to, but you know how that works out. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Brother Cossack.
How you doing?
Good, good. You?
Surviving. It's been a difficult day.
Yeah, well, you know, it's what Mark Twain wrote in The Voice of Adam in The Diary of Adam and Eve. Sunday, pulled through.
Yeah. Just a little note for you. The security guard down here in Bay County who shot the idiot.
Right.
At the school board meeting. You know who he is in his other life.
Oh, no.
Yeah. He's Salvage Santa. Has been for the last 30 years.
Salvage Santa.
Yes. He takes in broken and used bicycles, repairs them, and hands them out at Christmas to the kids.
Oh, that okay. That's what that reference was. Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. I thought you were going to tell me he was like the local snake handling fundamentalist or something.
No. He's a real Santa, but Santa shot the shot the criminal. Oh God.
Well, sometimes you know, sometimes Santa has to do things that are unpleasant.
Yeah.
But I, you know, still that story kind of came and went. Why the V for Vendetta symbol? You've probably had more coverage down there than we have, Cossack.
Well, the idiot that stormed in there with his gun, he was one of those Bible-thumping, Beck-listening,
You're kidding. Okay, I was kind of scared with the V for Vendetta symbol. I was afraid he was one of ours.
No. He's one of theirs, definitely.
They always are. So I mean, he was a Beck boy.
Oh yeah,
he was a Beckerhead.
Yep, just like that lunatic up in the Northeast decided to take out the tides.
San Francisco, yeah.
Yeah. Oh God.
But God forbid we should point out the fact that these people are that way. They can't do that.
Well, they don't make a real big point of it. They made a point of it down here though. They pointed that out rather well. Do you know what Bay County is known for, by the way?
I will leave that to you to tell me.
Judicially speaking. Ever heard of Gideon versus Wainwright?
Oh, gosh, yes.
That's where it happened, right here. Right here.
Fill folks in, would you please?
Okay. Gideon was an indigent who was convicted of a crime. And he complained because he had no counsel, and they said, well, that doesn't apply to you. That's only in capital cases. Yours is not a capital case. We don't have to provide representation. And that went to the Supreme Court, and they said, no, if it's a criminal charge, you must provide a lawyer. That was in 1963. That's when that happened.
Yeah, that's when the Impeach Earl Warren stickers started popping up all over creation.
Yeah, because shortly
after a movement, by the way, that was driven by one Gerald Ford.
Correct. That one. And, I don't know. It's rough. Yeah, like I said, I've unfortunately been having a rough day. My gastroparesis kind of kicked in today, and it's been hellacious.
Yeah, there's never a good time of year for that.
No. And the problem is the reason I have gastroparesis, it looks like my vagus nerve is just gone. And it's probably from the diabetes, the ancillary neuropathy.
Hate to hear it, brother. Is there any relief?
Not really. It's just trying to survive it. It's tough. It takes a lot out of you. It really does. I mean, you know what the problem is. Like they did that wonderful little nuclear study where they give you some radioactive eggs and they get to time it to see how long it takes to evacuate your stomach. They found that 2 tablespoons of eggs took me about 179 minutes to clear.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'll be sitting there for 2 or 3 or 4 days with stuff just sitting there and fermenting, which is really interesting. No matter how good the meal was when it went down, after 2 or 3 days, you really don't want to.
Yeah, Christmas dinner is going to be a little rough.
Yeah. No, there ain't no Christmas dinner. Not for this little elf. I guess it looks like it's going to be chicken soup.
You're Cossack, the clear liquids diet elf.
You got it. Oh, and little something from, you know, going back to the St. Louis and so forth. Those limits were still in place when my parents were trying desperately to get over here because they were what is known as DPs. You ever heard that?
Displaced persons?
You got it. Because they couldn't very well go back to where they came from because they'd been taken over by the communists. And they couldn't really stay where they were. Well, they could, but they really didn't want to stay in Austria for a wide variety of reasons.
Eminently reasonable reasons.
Yeah. And, you know, I found out later that we had a choice. It was either Australia or the U.S.
Australia looks pretty good now, doesn't it?
Yeah, I wish they would have picked Australia, but we knew people here and, you know, things like that, so we decided to come over here. But the problem,
and of course, that was back in the time of those sort of pastel colored picture postcards and cars with fins on them and things like that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all good.
And yeah, the problem is that because they were DPs, they didn't fit in any category, and so they just had to wait and wait and wait and wait. You know, that's the thing that people lay against Roosevelt wasn't Roosevelt, as you pointed out. It was all the nativist nut jobs.
Well, credit Tosh with all of that, because I definitely needed that correction.
Oh yeah. But I mean, the thing is, I won't even say what they are. But, you know, it was more important to them to maintain their white European majority than allow people who were in dire straits to have some place to go. We made exceptions for people like Father Albert, thank God, for minor miracles, and a few of the other gang, like Fermi, whose wife was Jewish. That was the reason he had to get out of Italy. Bob, how ignorant are these people? It's beyond me. It's beyond me.
Well, but is it, but Cossack, is it ignorance? I don't think it is. Unless you're willing to say that all bigotry and all prejudice flows from a place of ignorance. I don't think so. I just think it comes from an ugly place.
Well, that too. But, I mean, I just think you have to be ignorant to judge any group of people. I kind of had that beaten into my head early and often. You know, whenever I would make an idiot remark like that, my dad would sit there and say, remember, you almost weren't here because of people like that. We almost died because of people like that. Most of our family is dead because of people like that. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. I never understood what was this family thing that people were talking about, you know, with aunts and uncles and cousins and so. We didn't have that. Our nuclear family was about all we had. Everybody else was dead. I mean, my father's brother, his sister, most of my mother's family, they're all dead. That, you know, it's kind of one of the things that drove me around the bend almost on the Yugoslavia thing. What was left of my mother's family in Zenica? We're all killed. Out of her huge, and I know because I met them, I knew these people, out of her very large extended family, all we had left were two people. Two. Everybody else is dead. And I got this directly from the mouth of the person that pulled them out of there. He was a family friend, used to be the American consul in Belgrade. And he was on the last helicopter pulling people out of there, and he pulled the last two members of my family, extended family, that survived. He pulled them out. Now, it's not funny when the U.S. sits there and gets involved in these things. They kill a lot of people. And to us, yes, we think it's terrible. Yes, it's horrid to hear about, you know, people getting killed, wedding parties getting annihilated. But when you actually...
But it's nothing new.
Right. But when you actually personally know these people, it makes a difference. When their relatives, like when they blew up the TV station in Belgrade, a friend of mine was in that building. He didn't make it. When they blew up that TV station, they also damaged a little Russian church that's right behind it, where my parents had gotten married.
Well, that would make it hard to stomach for just about anybody, Cossack.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when they blew up the TV tower on Mount Avila, they also took out a place where my fiancé and I kind of cemented our relationship. When they blew up a place in Fruška Gora, that had personal meaning to me. I mean, this is the thing. Bob, it's like looking back at your life, at your earlier life, and watching all the places and people that you knew disappear. And they're doing that to you right now.
Yep.
And that's what people don't get through their thick little skulls. It's not funny. This is a matter of life and death. Literally.
Well, life and death and money, Kase. Because it's good business. It's terrible. It's terrible humanity, but it's awfully good business, which says a little something about the war business.
You know, it's like, let me tell you a little story, if I might.
Go ahead.
Like I said, my people were DPs. The reason we couldn't go back, one of them, was right after the war, even though my parents were living in the American sector, my dad got kidnapped by a group of Soviets. He was stuck on a train in a cattle car. Through extremely diligent efforts of my dad and several other men on there, they knocked a hole in that car, and several of them escaped. This means my dad had to go on foot 1,000 miles through occupied territory, Soviet occupied territory, on foot, surreptitiously, to get back to his wife and kids. This took him 6 months. Everybody told my mom he was dead. Forget it. He's gone. And he finally shows up after 6 months. Looking like crap, but he was still there. That's why they couldn't go back. These people weren't joking. This is not funny. This is not a joke.
Not in the least.
And that's what people don't understand. You know, we go all gooey over the inscription at the foot of the Statue of Liberty. I hold my torch beside the golden door, send your tempest tossed to me. Bullshit. Send your cannon fodder and people who are willing to die in our mines and work themselves to death, and we'll use them up and toss them aside. You know how it is.
Yes, indeed.
I don't even have to tell you. You know, look at what they had going on in Pennsylvania. Those were mostly Eastern Europeans down in those holes. It's hard to get other people to go down there.
Yep.
And, you know, it's difficult, Bob. It's difficult to get across to people just how far from our moorings, how far from our principles we have come. There's a reason why Mark Twain was an anti-imperialist way back then.
Precisely because he saw the horrors of it.
Exactly. And we keep on saying, no, we're not an empire. We're not. Well, what the hell are you?
No, we're an empire. Can't get around it. And that's what makes so much of this so painful for so many people, Cossack, is that there are a lot of us who understand that the United States of America has no business being an empire.
No.
And we also understand historically what happens to empires. It's not. It's a movie whose ending we know all too well, and we'd rather not be in the movie ourselves, but we are.
Exactly.
I had a conversation before the program started, just about 10 minutes before showtime, with a caller, and I said, look, I'm not trying to be harsh or cruel, but I'm in a very dark place, and I can't do this. Crank up the Lee Greenwood stand and salute and it's morning in America BS anymore. I can't do it.
No.
Because it ain't true. And what we and a lot of the frustration that many of us feel, Cossack, and I won't presume to speak for you, but it sounds as if you've got a dose of the same thing I've got a dose of right now. Is that, you know, the worst feeling in the world isn't anger or horror or fear. The worst and most sickening feeling on earth is the feeling of utter powerlessness.
Yes.
Of being reduced to spectator status, to the horrors, both personal and public. And that's where I think a lot of us are. The tax cuts for the rich that went through, I'm sorry, maybe that trivializes what I'm feeling.
No.
But sitting there knowing that a gang of unrepentant thugs who squealed bloody murder about the deficit were suddenly able to go the total 180 hypocrite. And advocate and say, well, you know, we don't care about no deficit as long as we get our tax cuts.
Yeah. I mean,
and the fact that we as progressives, liberals, decent human beings, whatever you care to call us, were utterly powerless to do a damn thing about it.
Well,
because the guy we sent to Washington to take care to stand up to these punks suddenly found himself unable or unwilling to do so. And we are made to feel even sicker by contemplating whether it was unable or unwilling. because the unwilling part really, really gets nauseating.
Yeah. And the problem of it is, like I said again, and I will say it again, people go all gooey about the fact that it's our first black president. Okay, what difference does that make?
Well, yeah, and at this rate, he will be our last.
Exactly. I mean,
so whether he's reelected in 2012 or not, he will be our last.
Yeah. I mean, it would be a different. For example, if it were Maxine Waters, I could get excited about that. If it was, what was her name? Barbara Lee, who voted against the War Powers Act. You know, that's different. But, I mean, so what? You have a black...
And neither one of them would have a snowball's chance in hell of getting elected, Cossack. Let's bear that in mind.
Right. But, I mean, what's the difference in reality if you had Barack Obama or if you had Slappy in there? You know, he's a black man too, but so what? So what?
Yeah, you're talking about Clarence Thomas, right?
Correct.
I know, Cossack. I got to roll on. I hope you get to feeling better, but thank you for the profundity of this conversation. I appreciate it.
My pleasure, Bob.
You take care, my brother.
You too, Bob.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
From North Florida, that's the Cossack, and we move onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, did you get those discs? Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, well, I got, yes.
All right, well, are you able to play them?
I was.
Oh, okay. No, I didn't, because I had to, you know, I didn't know if they would transfer, you know what I'm saying?
It took a little tinkering, but we got there.
Oh, because I added some codecs and stuff to it.
Yeah, I managed it. Like I said, I had to fool, because one of the last problems that hasn't been solved on this machine is not a codec problem. It's actually a why doesn't the damn DVD player work problem.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
so,
no,
but I ran it on a laptop and it worked fine.
Oh yeah, because a lot of times with that, you always have to, you know, some players won't have the codes to read the different file
right.
formats.
Exactly.
And I sent those along, but I didn't anticipate. I didn't think of anything mechanical. This is all like software.
Yeah, right. I've got a mechanic, but it's more fun to watch it on the laptop anyway.
Oh, anyway, I was amazed that it got there so quickly. That's why I was a bit shocked. I'm like,
well, see, the U.S. Postal Service can get stuff east-west. It's north-south that's their problem.
Oh, because I thought, sure, I got the impression it wouldn't be there until sometime this week. But anyway, neither here nor there. I suppose we sound crazy. listen, so I have to go back to what, you know, this is real trivial. But now what? Robert Kraft had a Christmas party?
Well, it was a soiree. It was a to do. I don't know. Maybe it was Christmassy, but yeah, it was for the Sunday Night Football crew.
And he put Rush and
he invited Dan Rush Patrick, along as well.
And Dan Patrick did he have anything to say about it? Or he just
no. It was more about what was not said.
Oh, that is so gross. I'm sorry. I was just listening and thinking. Oh, no.
Dan Patrick on his radio show today said that Keith Olbermann never came up.
Oh, was he being funny?
Well, no, I don't know. Maybe that he expected Limbaugh to opine, but Limbaugh apparently, to some degree, maybe the medicine was working, behaved himself.
Mm. Oh, God, so they're still trying to subject the sports-loving crowd.
Right, because there's a circle there that says that, yeah, that says that Limbaugh would be he would be as great a sports commentator as he is a political commentator. And, you know, I tend to agree with it. He's crap on both fronts, but they don't mean it that way.
Oh, no, that one guy who does, you know, they're always going on about him. He does the football calls. Oh, God, what, Michaels?
Oh, Al Michaels, yeah.
He's that's enough of a right-wing prick. We don't need another one. You know what I'm saying?
They will not be happy until they control everything. Remember, they want it all.
Yeah, no, I was just, anyway, so that story bugged me. But listen, what's the deal with Michael Vick? Good Lord, that team, that was the Giants.
That was a damned fun game to watch.
That shit was great. And the Giants, that's a shame. I tell you, that was like, hello.
Well, what I loved was Tom Coughlin screaming at the punter.
Yeah, listen.
Now, your entire punt coverage team has just gone straight to hell. And granted, it was a terrible, terrible punt.
Mm.
And it wasn't what he was supposed to do. But I guess the punter was nearest. Because there's a lot of people. Hey, the dude fumbled and you couldn't tackle him?
Yeah, well, anyway, I mean, you know, what can I say? I'm of mixed mind about the Vic thing, but it's just something really funny about the whole spectacle because, you know, on the one hand, the football is totally violent and obscene, and they're trying to make it so, passable. And then you have this freak who just sort of came straight out of Leavenworth and is running the show. I find it hilarious, okay?
Well, yeah, I forget who it was. Was it F. Scott Fitzgerald who said there are no second acts in American life? Well, apparently for Michael Vick there are. And, you know, he paid his debt to society. But move on, right?
Oh, yeah, no, he was locked up. No, Leavenworth, that's no joke. You see what I'm saying? It's like you can kill bitches and nothing happens to you, but with dogs and stuff, they'll put you in Leavenworth.
Yeah, because Ray Ray never missed a game, did he?
No, and I'm sorry to go there because I know the whole animal thing, and I have a dog, you know, I have a dog now, but I just have to look at it for what it is. It's like, let's move on already, but it's entertaining because to see all these people cringing trying to talk about Vic, they still seem to have issues with it, but they got to give him his due, and I can't think of anything funnier if they was to go on and win that trophy.
Oh, the world would be on its ear.
That's hilarious.
Or the NFL watching world would be on its ear, and PETA would be on its ear. And
oh my God, it would just be. But you know, like I said, it's just more of the drama that's entertaining, and it's interesting that he is such a freak of nature to be away from the game for that long and come back like this. Wow.
Well, last night, you know, I watched him. I watched him during his college career because he humiliated West Virginia on a number of occasions. And last night he looked like the same Michael Vick that was just that juked the Mountaineers right out of her shoes.
Yeah, no, I mean it's just like I said, his talent is just. I mean, I don't know. I'm just looking at that thing, and now he seems to have combined it with some actual quarterbacking. So yeah, he's freaky.
And then to turn around and follow that up by watching the Steelers mail one in on the Jets.
What was that? That was just bizarre. I don't understand.
Well, apparently, if you're the Steelers and you're playing at home, you can't get a call. I mean, there were muggings taking place on pass routes.
No, see, I didn't watch that. I just sort of read about it, but I was surprised in lieu of what's been going on with Cutie Pie, Mark Sanchez. He don't seem to know what's going on, but I guess he managed to pull it together, huh?
Well, yeah, and you know, Ben Roethlisberger just couldn't get it done in the last 8 seconds of the game.
Well, Sanchez is like, he's just kind of too cute for that game, but I suppose he'll work it out.
Well, and you got something coming down the road, Sandra, a possible playoff game between Atlanta and Philly?
Yes.
Yeah. Reckon there'll be a few storylines coming out of that?
Wow.
That could be profound.
Well, I'm just wondering, so because I don't know all the ins and outs, but are we going to have another clash of the Pretty Boys with Sanchez and Brady in the play? They can play each other in the playoffs, right?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I don't know how that sets up, but yeah.
But you know, the Patriots are a machine again.
Well, no, that's scary. I'm sorry. As weird as the hoodie is, damn, he know what the hell he's doing. I ain't never seen nothing like that either.
No. Yeah, he's Omar Bradley.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. I mean, it's like, hello? Shake loose a few people, get some old retreads, and he's off and running. That guy is incredible. I got to give him credit. I hate the Patriots. You know I do. I'll give him credit because, yeah, they're playing some strong football at the moment. But what's happening with the Colts? They got some issues.
to say the least.
Anyway, listen, so...
What, 8-6 are they?
Yeah, you know, just sort of weirdness. It's kind of weird, you know, to see. I mean, I'm not a huge Manning fan, but he definitely is sort of amazing quarterback to watch, but he seems to be having some issue.
Well, he's, and I think that has to do with his receiving core.
Okay, yeah, and I know his personnel is a bit weak this time around. They can't run a football to save their life, though, that team. Wow.
No. And when that happens, then, you know, your passing game, it goes to hell. But, you know, poor little Eli last night just looked like he didn't know. What do I got to do?
Yeah, no, that is, no, that was crazy. I mean, they shouldn't have lost that game, really. That's on them. They ought to be ashamed of themselves.
Well, Michael Vick beat him. He just beat him.
Right, he did come, but they didn't, yeah, but they really shouldn't have.
How many points in 7 minutes?
28?
Yeah.
20, something like that? It was, I know he looked out and got that last one to run back, which sort of sealed the deal, but he did. He did 21 points unanswered in like, a quarter, or less than half a quarter, right?
Yeah. And if there's anything to be said about the Patriots, David in Tennessee noting, Sandra, that their defense is way soft. He says, my Packers have 6 offensive players out for the season, and a rookie QB came within 1 brain fart of kicking their ass at home. So.
Yeah, well, no, you know, I can't believe they're thinking of, I mean, looking at the mess that is the NFL, I mean, as far as how rough it is, I can't believe they're thinking of expanding it to 2 games. I think that's the worst thing they can possibly do. I can't believe it. I think it's such a bad move. Is that what they're going to try to do?
Hope not.
It's terrible.
But at this point in time, anything's possible.
I know. It's not really. Yeah, everything. Yeah, it's definitely.
Because true. What we're seeing here, and this is sort of cross spectrum, whether it's politics or sport. Everything is NASCAR, for Christ's sakes. Everything is being shifted into the reality television model, Sandra. And you know, toward that end, look for things to get a lot worse, not any better.
Well, NASCAR, they suffered huge loss in, I don't want to say popularity, but in revenue from their fan base. You know, it's nowhere near what it was. I guess maybe it has something to do with the economy, like everything else, I guess.
Well, because NASCAR's in a special place, Sandra, because it's not like, you know, you've got a guaranteed fan base in Philly or New England or Indianapolis or Green Bay, where Atlanta, any team sport where they have a home per se. NASCAR has no home. It's a traveling circuit road show, and you've got to have people excited enough to come out who might not necessarily have any particular attachment. That's why they built that reality television model. That's why they superimposed that onto NASCAR. I've told the story before, but it bears repeating. I will never forget when Dale Earnhardt died, and a woman showed up at our door and wanted my wife to drive her all the way across the river to the little arts and crafts store so she could buy some black crepe. Because she wanted to dress out her house and her car in black bunting for Dale.
Okay, so you would say that was the high point of that sport?
Yeah, had the DuPont, the big flashy colors, the Rainbow Warrior, whatever they called him. That was evil black car Dale Earnhardt. This is kind of the NASCAR right now is the NBA right after Magic and Larry quit and before Michael came on.
So they're in decline because they're missing the sort of stars.
Yeah, Jeff Gordon. Jeff Gordon.
Oh no, see that's like milk toast. I'm sorry, I have to say. I don't even, I know who he is, but I'm like, you know, If I'm thinking of NASCAR, I'm thinking about crack, crack, crack for entertainment value, not no engineer from California. Jeff Gordon.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate the narrative of NASCAR for sure.
Yeah, because it's a redneck narrative, and yeah, right, exactly. You know, guys named Buddy and Bubba.
Yeah, and I
Skeeter.
It's kind of like wrestling at 200 miles an hour, right?
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
Right, well, no, that's all good. Well, anyway, listen, I have to move on to this. So that thing I sent you from the Daily Kos, I mean, what are the stories coming out about him announcing these cuts in Social Security? I mean, have you seen those stories?
Yeah, I did, and I don't know quite how to handle it. What you're referencing, of course, a diary by Marmaduke II over at Daily Kos. He writes, or she, well, it begins. Obama is now planning on taking an axe to the sacred democratic program of Social Security. Now that he got his way on the tax cuts, he's going after Social Security. And the quote, the second part, now being teed up by the White House and key Senate Democrats, is a scheme for the president to embrace much of the Bowles-Simpson plan, including cuts in Social Security. This is to be unveiled, according to well-placed sources, in the president's State of the Union address. Again, though, Sandra, I got to say, this goes back to the reality showization of American politics. How far off is the State of the Union address? A couple of weeks, at least, right?
Well, sometimes it's like towards the end of January, actually.
Right.
So it's a good month, I'm sure. Yeah.
But now we will go back and forth in breathless anticipation of it. And if he does this, this is where Bob Dylan walks on stage at the Newport Jazz Festival with his electric guitar, plays It's All Over Baby Blue, and walks off stage.
But the thing is, I think that the Democratic Party has completely lost its mind, and, you know, I put the blame squarely on the schizophrenia of trying to be beholden to capital and run an empire and pretend that you represent people. So it's not really happening anymore. So that's why the party looks...
The part that drove me a little crazy was the speculative part. The quote that says, the idea is to preempt an even more draconian set of budget cuts likely to be proposed by the incoming House Budget Committee chairman. You know what? That's not political jujitsu. That's political cowardice. Because the way you preempt that is you let them pass that crap in the House, and if the Democrats don't just absolutely stymie it in the Senate, then that's what the veto pen is for.
I was about to say, so that's why I don't trust, I'm sort of getting to the point where the Democratic Party, and they better watch out, because if they don't represent what they claim to, then they become irrelevant. You see what I'm saying? So I think that they're doing themselves a great disservice if they're about to step away from Social Security. Because what is the point of the Democratic Party then, truly?
That may be the most profound question of the evening. Once you get rid of Social Security, once you start disassembling the social safety net, for what reason does the Democratic Party exist?
And it already started with this 30% reduction in the Social Security revenue stream. That has never been done. And of course, unless you're in it like we are looking at it, people don't realize that, what's going on here. But that is such a huge deal that was facilitated by a Democratic administration. They decided now we're going to attack the only source that makes Social Security a standout program is its independent collection ability. And they're going to start effing with it? And then we're supposed to think that these weak-ass people are going to say in a year, okay, it's back up to 6.2? Do you believe that? It's hard to me. I can't believe it. So what I'm saying, though, is that I'm preparing myself to disengage from the Democratic Party, because it really is going to be what Thomas Friedman and all those people want. Their deepest dream is to have just the sort of technocrats who know what's best running shit.
And, you know, Dean Baker's already out in front on this. Just got it. I'd seen it earlier today, but Clayton sent it along as well. Savings a piece at Huffington called Saving Social Security, Stopping Obama's Next Bad Deal.
Right, okay, so it's not like people are unawares.
No. Other people know as well.
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you saw this, but apparently he had some sort of unannounced meeting with a so-called left-leaning economist before, like right after they did that deal, but before his press conference.
Yeah, is this like the labor leader meeting that he had last week?
Yeah, it was with apparently Krugman and Stiglitz and, you know, all the economists that, you know, you and I have heard and read. He had a meeting with them trying to explain to them how this is going to benefit. And apparently it didn't go all that well because that's when he came out and went off on the sanctimonious left. And I think that's very interesting. It's like he was trying to tell a bunch of economists that what he's doing is
well, he was peeing on their leg and telling them it was raining.
Right, and they obviously said, yeah, whatever. As you can see, they took it out in other venues because that piece that Krugman wrote, oh!
Look, when Paul Krugman gets to the point where he's referencing zombies...
Shut the hell up. I was just like, that article just completely, I'm thinking, and then this, and I read that article before I read this sort of meeting. I'm thinking, wow, he seems real done.
What did he say at the end of it? The
very end is hilarious. Yeah.
Because it almost, forgive me. I mean, this is pure ego on my part, but it almost sounded like he'd been listening to the show. Because when you're hauling out cultural references like, you know, please don't feed the zombies because they'll eat your brain and then they'll eat your economy.
Yeah.
You know, we've been saying this for how long, Sandra?
I don't know, but it's just sort of, you know, the whole tone of the article is like, you know, damn, he don't know much about economics. I mean, Obama, and he really don't know. Because that article just sort of comes across as if, wow, we're not going to get what we need out of the White House. And, in fact, it seems like it's going to be more detrimental. Because I'm not hearing the, oh, we must introduce something in order to avoid a worse outcome. That's bullshit. That's what he does. That's what he's turning out to be good at.
And the thing is, you know, again, reading this... the title of the column is When Zombies Win. When you read lines like this, none of this stopped the right, talking about all the things that he's done to appease them. None of this stopped the right from denouncing him as a socialist, but it helped empower bad ideas in ways that can do quite immediate harm. And then he goes on and he says, politics is the art of the possible. We all understand the need to deal with one's political enemies, but it's one thing to make deals to advance your goals. It's another to open the door to zombie ideas. When you do that, the zombies end up eating your brain and quite possibly your economy, too. And you know, that's not all there is. You know, Dean Baker says, you know, this is unlovingly written. President Obama insists that he is a really bad negotiator. Therefore, the deal he got on the 2-year extension of the Bush tax cuts and the 1-year extension of unemployment insurance benefits was the best that he could do. This package also came with a 1-year cut in the Social Security tax. But again, that idea, President Obama insists that he's a really bad negotiator. Again, we've been saying that. Why is, you know, this shouldn't be that hard to get our heads around, right?
Well, no, but I'm taking a more cynical approach because I'm sorry. He was told to not push the don't ask, don't tell. But apparently he called and said, no, we're going to push it because they were threatening with assault. And he told Reid to go ahead and put it through anyway. So I'm like, oh, okay, so he does engage Congress? I'm confused because I was told that that's not how he works. All of a sudden he works that now because he's threatening that his presidency is going to come undone and I want this to pass. Because, I mean, dude had to come out with something. And everyone's all excited about the don't ask, don't tell. And, of course, I am too. But keep in mind that that's not a concern of Wall Street. Do you understand what I'm saying, Bob?
Right.
They
exactly.
don't give a. They don't give a.
And
I sound horrible because I don't, you know, but I'm really happy about that on some levels just because we're so militarized. If that's one way a group can get their foot in the door, more power to them, because that's what happened with black folks. But Wall Street don't care about that, because if Wall Street cared about it, it'd be like them people trying to get coverage for their sickness after digging in hell after 9/11. Wall Street and the chamber seem to care about that. And has that passed yet, Bob?
No.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm just going straight that way.
I know. And culturally speaking, you know, this is a very special night, Sandra. It is the 20th of December, and they're having their little Confederacy ball down in South Carolina tonight.
No, that's right.
And there's already been more than 100 protesters. But here's the fun part. And by that, I'm being very sarcastic. Here's the fun part. Attending the ball, according to our buddy David in South Carolina, will be the president of the South Carolina State Senate and three other Republican senators. Nice, huh?
Okay. Whoa, wow. Wow.
This report comes from the South Carolina, the state. I guess that's the newspaper. Just wrap your head around this paragraph or this sentence. Event organizers said while there will be a reenactment of the signing of the Articles of Secession, Ordinance of Secession, there will not be African-American reenactors present posing as the slaves who were present. Because there were slaves in the room. But that part, not so much.
Well, I'm surprised they didn't blackface some fuckers and do it. Shit.
Wouldn't surprise me, you know.
I know the absurdity of it, and it's so insulting. It's as bad as Haley Barbour and the, I don't remember being that bad. No, your big-ass, white-ass wouldn't, would it? Oh, my God. The thing is that they're pushing this freak to be a presidential nominee, and dude is praised nonstop these days because apparently he helped engineer this last election. So Haley Barbour is in the catbird seat.
You think presidentially?
Well, I mean, the Weekly Standard article I read, it was nothing but love. And I understand it's the Weekly Standard.
Well, but don't worry, because I just saw this come across my tweets from one of the biggest liberal Twitterers. Shock, the really, really sharp tweeter. He says, John King, CNN, has known Haley Barbour a long time. He doesn't believe he's a racist. Well, good. If John King says it, then we can all sleep tight tonight, right?
Oh, no, well, no. No, he's going to get a pass on that. I mean, but it's just kind of incredible. But watch out for Haley Barbour. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but he has definitely other ambitions now.
And you know what? There may be room for him. The little clown car act that is so far proven to be the Republican hopefuls for 2012 definitely has room for one more clown.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
but you know my feeling on that. It's all stalking horses.
Yeah, because you think Jeb is gonna pop up. Well, listen, if Obama makes the mistake of, you know, doing a overt attack on Social Security, he's gonna be in trouble. I don't really know where he thinks he is, but I think a lot of people want to maintain Social Security, and it's not just generational, because if you got parents, hello, it don't take much to figure it out.
No.
So I think it's the wrong, I can't even believe that we're even having this conversation, to be honest. It's so.
Well, you know, I would never have dreamed it in a million years. But then again, so much of my adult life has turned into that, Sandra.
Well, is he going to sign? Is he committed to signing the Don't Ask? I mean, that's like a given, right? He's gonna.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
tweet,
done.
Right?
I mean, he will, but it will only after they've assembled, you know, a real a fanfare of it. Because frankly, and I'm not trying to take the starch out of it, he needed to get the gay community off his back.
Oh no, because that was one group that was on his ass. That's the thing that I thought was very interesting. People chaining themselves, going to the hospital, falling out, on and on and on, which is exactly what you want to see. But if that hadn't happened, yeah, he desperately needed it. And that's why I said all the phone calling that was coming out of the White House was more than interesting when it was all dead on arrival with every other bit of legislation, wasn't it?
Yeah. And do you reckon they've learned their lesson about my Senator Joe Manchin yet?
Well, listen, not only is that just foul, that dude is fucking ugly.
Oh, come on. He's got great hair.
Wow. I'm like, hello? Jesus. And I know, what do I sound like? But I'm just like, damn, you know. And that, and that Kyle, these people are so unappealing all around. So gruesome. What is wrong with Manch? Didn't he understand how to be a senator? Didn't he go to Senate class?
Probably cut class.
Okay, so he felt that he couldn't vote on those two issues because
they had planned a family Christmas party over a year ago because the whole family couldn't be together on Christmas.
Well, no, but didn't anyone tell him what his obligations are at all? Is he a Democrat? He's a Democrat, right?
That's how he ran.
Well, no, because that's
it ain't how he lives.
That's scandalous, you know. It really is.
You know, by the way, turning back to Haley Barbour for a minute, David in Tennessee noting something here, Sandra, he said, Haley Barbour as president? No, Jebby. Haley as VP? Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Southern strategy at its finest.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I definitely see that, but I just don't think that...
Because remember, Jebby, you know, Jebby doesn't need a... We've talked about it. Maybe he'd pick a woman or a person of color as a... He doesn't need that because he's got a Mexican wife.
Oh, yeah, well, no, after the, you know, after the job that's being done by the current Nignog, I don't think we have to worry about presentation anymore. I'm sorry. Good Lord.
Well, that's what I meant when I said that he may be our first black president, but it's looking more and more like he's going to be our last one, too. And that may be the main thrust. To a certain extent, maybe the Republican Party will be happy as long as we never go fooling around with any persons of color or persons of gender in the White House. It's a white man's job.
That just makes me feel really ill. You know what I mean? But I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate, but that is definitely part of Obama's storyline if he don't get it together. Now, of course, he's a master at campaigning. But I think that in some quarters, they're already suggesting that the corporate world is done with Obama. So he's toast, you know?
If they sell him out, he is. And that's, you know, that's why I keep doing the Jebby shtick, because there's nobody that corporate America right now, corporate America, well, maybe corporate America would get behind Mitt Romney, and maybe that would be enough to swing the, the religious voters. I don't know. That's a lot of leverage. But when, was it Cornyn or Kyle? It was Kyle. It was John Kyle who took to the floor of the Senate to slime Harry Reid's religion, you know, and Reid's a Mormon just like Romney is, and saying that, you know, that he had no respect for Christianity. You know, that's a real sharp little fundamentalist dig at a Mormon because the right wing's full of it. That it isn't really Christianity. And so when John Kyle said that Harry Reid didn't have any reverence for Christianity because he had him in the Senate on Sunday, well, you know, what does that say about Mitt Romney's chances? Come on.
Oh, no. I mean, yeah, those people are just absolutely despicable. And, you know, the whole idea of looking at the Congress, because they'll be there first, the specter of that. And have you seen this foul Ryan? This sort of...
Well, yeah, and that's what that Daily Coast article was talking about, is that this speculation about Social Security and he wants to examine the tax code, yada, 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 that it's all triangulation to get to it, to get ahead of it before Paul Ryan from Wisconsin.
And, yeah, I mean, he's horrific, that guy. And this just leads to the whole thing about what they want to do to the states. Did you get a chance to look at that stuff that I sent you?
Yeah, I did.
I mean, it's really like, I was just gobsmacked reading that Weekly Standard article, because what they're proposing to do is to allow states an orderly way to bankrupt just so they can destroy, finally, the last area of unionization in this country. I mean, it's stunning.
Yeah, it's plain old-fashioned, nasty-ass union busting.
Ryan, Obama, you know, it's like they keep playing it. They don't seem to have any long-term understanding at all of what these people are all about. Because that plan for the state, that is like Hoover Town, here we come. Hoover Towns all over this country.
Well, sure, and add to that the latest remarks from Newt Gingrich.
Oh, please, what did he say?
Well, guess where Newt's been, oddly enough.
Where?
South Carolina. Surprise, surprise. And he told a crowd of 250 cheering GOP activists the following. I'm opposed to giving people money for doing nothing. And then he went on to compare unemployment benefits to welfare. And he says the country spent $134 billion last year on unemployment compensation and got nothing for it. Paying people to do nothing for 99 weeks.
Okay, so what...
he went to South Carolina to say this because Jim DeMented's the one who's out there saying that unemployment needs to be a loan.
Oh, I know. No, but the stupidity packed behind that, though, or the assumption that's packed behind that, of that the stupid people will buy what you're saying is unbelievable. Because what you pay into that.
What are you going to pay the loan back with?
Oh, it's a joke. No, you're gonna be a serf. Neo-feudalism. That's all this is all about. Anyway, yeah, that's, I'm just so scared about the sort of economic repression that's coming down the pike. Did you see that 60 Minute piece?
Oh, yeah.
No, that's another thing.
That was an out-and-out hit.
Yeah, but there's no response at all. Coming from 60 Minutes, they just showed one absolute side, the austerity side, where they didn't even mention the word taxes at all. It's all cutting, and sacrifice only on the workers. Where's the sacrifice for Christie's millionaire friend? Nothing.
Well, and to the same extent, what was it? It was Press the Meat on Sunday, where he had a panel including that jack-off who's with the No Labels Bunch.
No, that's another thing. Oh, my gosh. See, it's just so much today. No Labels. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, No Labels. Stealth Republicans.
No, that's bullshit.
And the funniest part of it came when somebody said, you only had 3 black speakers. And the guy said, well, then they didn't know what we were doing because we only had 3 black speakers. Really, that's how it came out. I went, you know, spit take. And, I mean, the whole thing is, whenever Republicans want to fly under their own radar, you know that the Republican Party has gotten to its absolute extremist worst. And that's where they are. So, you know, No Labels, really? The guy was, Mark McKinnon. That was the guy who was on.
No, that's a joke.
And he was talking about how, what's his name, Cory Booker, the mayor of the mayor of Newark, who was a person of color. And he said, well, look over here how Mayor Booker is working with Governor Christie, and they're able to solve their differences. Horse feathers.
No. You know about Cory. He comes out of the Manhattan Institute, which is one of those foundations. Backed by the Koch brothers. So he's like the new
man. It all sources to the same vile cesspool, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm just saying that guy is one of them sort of new black leadership, which always leads back to some neoliberal think tank or worse, and he's out of that, trying to pretend otherwise, trying to privatize schools. That's what them people are about. They want all the schools to be like New Orleans, where they make you walk down a black line in silence and make you not speak when you eat lunch, Bob. That's what they want, especially for poor kids. You can talk if you're in an affluent school.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. I am so pissed off today. I am so through. Because this shit is, like, unbelievably connected to the same thing. Like you just said, it all leads back to that bullshit.
And like you said, and the response? Beep.
No, it's terrible. It's terrible. So I really, I just think that, we got to just, I don't know if we can do it through this show, but, we got to really stay on top of what we're being fed here, I know that it's not like we have loads of solutions, but I ain't going to be blindsided ever again by this bullshit. It's unbelievable what's going on.
Well, I got to give you something to laugh about before we go.
Okay.
In a minute, or when I get a sec, I'm going to email you a video. It's one of those sit-down first things. Jude emailed it to me and was just flabbergasted. And so was I, and other people are just spit take it. From a website called God Discussion, headline, The Vatican's Chippendales. Hunky men tear off shirts and do an acrobatic performance for the Pope. You're so not going to be all right.
Oh, what? Well, he's suspect anyway. What?
Oh yeah, it's a little puff piece from RTV, Russian TV.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, they're coming on. They're getting some, they're getting some press. And it's apparently an acrobatic troupe that I don't know how to. It will leave you speechless. It's an acrobatic troupe who go and perform for His Holiness. And they really do. They walk to within about 15 feet of His Holiness with a whole bunch of cardinals sitting behind him and a whole bunch of nuns out in the audience.
Wait, and they like got pecs and abs?
Oh, and they are manscaped, Sandra.
Oh.
Not a chest hair in sight, and I mean buff.
Oh, snap. Well, what?
And then they all take their white shirts off, and they've got their little tight pants on and their little white ballet slippers, and they start doing acrobatic exercises of where they in another era they would have been playing the saber dancing, and they start climbing all over each other.
It sounds like looking like something out of Tom of Finland. So I don't know if you know what that is.
I'll take your word for it.
Oh, Thomas Finland is like this. It's a really famous gay artist who would do sketches of the most amazingly buff men.
Well, I have gone all over this trying, for all I'm worth, to make this a finding the little hidden onion the bug some.
Okay, so you know. You can't believe it's that bad where you can't even believe it.
I mean, you got homely nuns out in the audience waving their white hankies like women in the 70s throwing panties at Elvis.
No, listen, it can't be what you're describing. That can't be for real.
It is.
It's in the Vatican.
I swear.
No, I got love.
And it's a short little piece. The whole thing is the so-called news package that this is a minute and 45 seconds.
No, you're going to find out that was a joke.
No, it is not. It's got the RTV. It's got the RT little logo on it. It's for real.
Wow. Well, listen, I got a lot of Catholic friends. I'll be passing that around.
Well, the funny thing is there's a sort of a jump cut, a hard edit, you know, because it looks like if you watch the package, it's in a minute and 45 seconds long. They walk in, they strip for the Pope. This Elizabeth Hurley-looking woman, all in black leather and stiletto boots, like they're dominatrix or something, takes their little white coats, and then they turn on their boombox, and they go to climbing all over each other.
And where are they from, the group?
Don't know. Looking at them, I'm guessing they're Turkish or some Eastern European kind of, and since it was covered by Russian TV, maybe there's an angle there. And, I mean, but there's a hard edit in it that lets you know that this wasn't as short as it looks, that this went on for minutes. And the cutaway B-roll shot of the nuns a-waving of their hankies. Lord of mercy.
Oh, well, that just said, well, yeah, you need to send that on. That just sounds crazy. Oh, my God.
Oh, and now I'm getting requests via email. Oh, send it to me, too. Send it to me, too.
Exactly. Listen, I just got this alert saying that the U.S. seeks to expand ground raids into Pakistan, Bob.
Yeah, I saw some of that earlier. This is really creepy stuff. Apparently, our station chief in Pakistan.
Well, yeah, his ass had to go.
Yeah, he had to leave in a straight up hurry.
In a hurry? No, I have to say, I've always been really just terrified of what goes on in India and Pakistan, and this isn't, you know, this isn't helping me. This news here.
No.
Anyway. But, no, please, because I need to see something amusing.
It's already in your inbox.
Okay, I thought it was something else I wanted to ask you, but I guess not. I'm glad you got the package.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. And, yeah, I guess that's it. I'll be looking forward to that video.
I imagine I will get an email right back going, no, no, no. But you go all over the website. It ain't a joke.
Okay, listen. I'm just saying, though, but it just sounds crazy, though. For the, you know, because the Vatican is already so suspect.
Well, look, it couldn't. This is going to, I don't mean any offense, but it couldn't be any more homoerotic if Bette Midler was singing with Barry Manilow playing piano in the corner.
No, but it's that.
I mean, it's bathhouse stuff. Not that I know, but. Yeah.
No, but dude is, you know, Nazi, Prada-wearing, weirdo.
Red shoes. Don't forget the red shoes.
Right. And so, ew. I mean, the one thing you could say about, no, never mind. I'm not even going to get into the Catholics.
I know. And God bless him. God bless him. Our chat room moderator, Lottie's in there with his ever optimistic take on it. Hey, it beats Riverdance.
And that fool is from Chicago, right?
Cool off.
Okay, good night.
See you, Sandra. Bye now. Got it. Honest to Jesus, you got to laugh somewhere along the way, or you're just going to be a mess. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah. Good evening. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. What's up?
Let's get something straight here. No one was attempting to skew you about Roosevelt and the Jews, okay?
No, we just had our facts wrong.
No, not quite. There have been a number of studies written about FDR and his attitude toward the Jews and what could be done about them. Number one, FDR was one of the greatest opponents of Nazism and Hitlerism and anti-Semitism, okay? However, he had his political problems with his State Department, and his State Department influenced him, shall we say, not to take steps perhaps he should have taken. And that was my point the other night on your program.
And I think Tosh's point is well taken, that there has been a great deal of right-wing revisionism of FDR's history.
Well, there have been a number of things written about that. There was a PBS documentary about Roosevelt and his attitude toward the Jews. There have been studies done about the same thing by the Holocaust Museum and things of that nature. and whether or not Roosevelt should have had the railroad tracks into Auschwitz, bombs, and things of this nature. Okay? But as far as the St. Louis is concerned, and there's a book written by Rosen, FDR and the Jews. There's another book that I suggest that Tosh read called The Voice of the Damned, referencing the, what happened to the people on that ship, that more could have been done. Now, the fault may have been with the State Department and not the White House. But preceding all this, it was 1939, preceding an election year. And in America at that time, there was a terrific anti-immigration sentiment because we could not take care of our own workers, much less import more workers. And it was unfortunate. It was very, very unfortunate that the country was caught in the throes of that particular situation. No one is a greater admirer of FDR than yours truly. And you know that from what I've said.
And I don't think that suggestion was made.
Beg your pardon?
I don't think that suggestion was made. What Tosh was remarking on was the fact that there is a great deal of right-wing revisionist FDR stuff out there. You know, everything from FDR knew about Pearl Harbor and did nothing to stop it to this issue, and that the stuff has become almost ubiquitous in the culture.
Well, I think you're going to have that written about everybody who had any type of political influence in American history. I mean, you can take similar views toward Abraham Lincoln and his real position of slaves.
Oh, Abraham Lincoln said as clear as anybody could possibly want to hear. He said, if I could end the war without freeing the slaves, I would do it. If I could end the war by freeing the slaves, I would do it. His plan prior to his assassination was to do the Liberia thing again and put everybody, all the African slaves on boats and send them back.
Well, you know, one of FDR's propositions were to direct European Jewry towards Africa and South America. Now, this has come out recently. So, you know, I'm really a little disturbed about leading you askew. I was simply pointing out that according to what I've read, and I've read extensively, and I have at least 12 books on Roosevelt and the policies of the New Deal and everything about him. As a matter of fact, I'm looking right now at a picture of him on my living room wall. And how many of your listeners had that on their living room wall at this time? And I wasn't even born when the man was president. But it is unfortunate that he was misplaced at that particular time in his ability to take a more active stance toward the saving of European Jewry.
There were, and based upon the information that I received, Jim, there were things that were done. There were things that were not done. The exact phrase that Tosh used was, "I am pretty sure that you and Jim have the story of the FDR, not you led me, but you and Jim have the story of the FDR versus the Jews and the SS St. Louis skewed to favor right-wing framing." Sadly, I submit that you've bought right-wing revisionism about FDR. And then suggest things to to the contrary.
Listen, there are two books. One by Wyman, which is a study of FDR's attitude towards the Jews, coming from the Holocaust Studies Museum, and then of course Robert Rosen's book, which I have. I have all these books in my library, and you know there are going to be a number of things that are being written. I remember the first collection of books that I had on FDR were Franklin Eleanor by Joseph P. Lash. And in that book, it says there was not one anti-Semitic bone in Roosevelt's body. And he did incorporate a number of people into his administration, like Frankenfurter, Morgenthau, And also one of his principal advisors was Bernard Baruch. Now, Bernard Baruch had his summer home in my hometown and also had a huge place in South Carolina called Hobcaw Barony, where Roosevelt would retreat during the war. He had a special train that went there. As a matter of fact, the very fireplace from Bernard Baruch's old home is in my mother's living room. And no one has ever been more a passionate supporter of FDR.
I understand. And the primary point that Jim was making, that Tosh was making, is that the fault for what happened with the SS St. Louis cannot be simply laid at FDR's doorstep. That there were things that were done before that whole scenario transpired that created it. You know, the failure of the bribery in Cuba, for starters.
Well, and basically what created that was the entire American attitude prior to that time. It was not very favorable to Jewish immigration. This wasn't a bad situation, but that's the way things were back then. And Roosevelt did have a lot of things to deal with. And he was not a perfect man by any means. He was one of the best presidents we've ever had, one of the most admired men that I know, in my personal view. And he couldn't be all things to all people. I mean, for example, he did a number of things to try to implement his policies. We talked that night about his efforts to pack the Supreme Court after they struck down the NRA. So he had an awful lot on his plate.
That he did. Jim, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Well, and I wish you and your family a Merry Christmas.
And to you as well. I'm sure we'll talk before then. Take care. By the way, this coming along from our blogger, Texas Betsy, from Mock Paper Scissors, a post titled, The South and My Lunch Will Rise Again. It's a lovely photograph of Lindsey Graham in a southern hoop skirt. This quote: South Carolina is too small to be a republic, and too large to be an insane asylum. Hard to refute something like that, in light of what's going on there, even as we speak. They are literally dancing in Confederate regalia, doing the Virginia Reel, and celebrating South Carolina's having precipitated the Civil War. I don't know about you, but that's just, God. Ron in Raleigh is sending a note along. Dadgummit! As I said when this little soiree was announced, where was my invite? I would have been perfectly willing to bring some color to those monochromatic proceedings. And then going back to the don't ask, don't tell. I heard from our buddy Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist. I have a guilty confession. I have another more personal joy in the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. After my 10 years in, I know some higher-ups whose heads are going to explode from this. Very, very few E8s and above deserve any respect. They are either very dumb, very mean, or both. I wish I could see their heads explode. About 25 minutes before the hour, and let's see if you're still there. Nope. So, a couple of things. Just a couple of things. There is some, I probably under ordinary circumstances would save this for Wednesday. Because it's got a religious flavor to it and therefore would qualify for a prayer meeting. But no, it's also about Morans. And this is, after all, Moran Monday. Some survey data has come out from the fine folks at Gallup. It was released on December the 17th. And it is, our buddy Matt Osborne over at OsborneInc.com, who has covered the anti-war protest in D.C. this past week. He's got a video coming out of it that will be well worth seeing. It will go up shortly at OsborneInc.com. But he put me onto this story about this Gallup data. And Matt is a bit of an optimist. He said, really, the number's that low? This is good. There's hope. Bear in mind, Matt thinks that this number is low, which maybe it is. I think it's high because the last time we checked, the people who believe this were roughly equivalent to the same number of people who believe in UFOs, who believe in, any number of things. New Gallup poll released December 17th reveals that 40% of Americans still believe that humans were created by God within the last 10,000 years. And to Matt's credit, the number is down from a previous high of 47% in 1993 and 1999. Here's where it gets worse. Another 38%, so now we're at 78%. Another 38% of respondents believe that humans have evolved from more basic organisms, but that God played a role in the process. Of the entirety of the American nation, based upon a statistical model, of course, only, and I do mean only, 16% of respondents said that they hold the belief that humans have evolved with no divine guidance. The good part, that number is nearly doubled from 9% in 1982. On things like this, it would appear that we are winning. Of the the beautiful thing with statistics like this is that they break it out and break it out and break it out so that you find out who is part of that 40%. Round up the usual suspects, as the saying goes, because 52% of those saying that they believe in young earth creationism, 52% of them are, of course, Republicans. Still, that leaves among Democrats and independents 34%. 34% of Democrats and independents believe in young earth creationism. Here's the kicker. Our universities turn out degreed people, our colleges. You're supposed to be exposed to certain things in college that will teach you to challenge the accepted wisdom. That's why you take things like biology to learn about the scientific method. Well, again, depends on how you view your glass, half empty or half full. If you're a half full kind of person, only 37% of respondents believe in creationism. Only 37%. But the belief in evolution without the aid of God goes up from 16%, it goes up 5 points, to 21%. In the chat room, Tobias Black asking, do they ever mention old earth creationism? And I guess that's what they're talking about when they say that 38% of respondents believe that humans have evolved from more basic organisms, but with God playing a role in the process. No, you're not going to be a wolf anymore, you're going to be a whale. Shazam. That kind of stuff. But this, you know, really, this doesn't bode well for the United States, because it means that there are 40% of Americans who want to take advantage of what science has to offer us, but have no interest in the actual reality behind the science. 40% of America would be interested, for instance, in going to get a flu shot, but utterly deny the fact that the flu shot has to be concocted from viruses that are constantly, what's the word, evolving. Stunning, isn't it? They go to doctors, and they have surgical procedures, and they take medicines beyond those vaccines that are all predicated upon the fact of evolutionary biology. This is an interesting statement. Views on human origins vary based on church attendance. Of those who attend church on a weekly basis, 60% believe in creationism, while a mere 2% subscribe to what the poll refers to as secular evolution. If, on the other hand, you rarely or never go into a religion industry building, only 24% believe in creationism, 39% believe in evolution without divine guidance. That is the only place in the entire poll where actual science beats fairy tales. Now, what I would be fascinated to learn, I would be fascinated to see this polling data done in Europe. Because I suspect that it doesn't play out the same way. Imagine that. Stand in a room of 100 people. Count to 40. Those people believe, recognizing again that the word belief is the most dangerous word in the English language, that a talking snake, a gossipy copperhead, a chatty cobra, led humanity out of a paradise state. Not that that was a metaphor for anything, but that there really, really was a gossipy Gabon. No. Maybe it's like that myth about how at midnight on Christmas all the animals start talking. I remember as a child staying up late one Christmas Eve and I was just eyeballing the dog. So what the heck? I wanted to hear it happen. I wanted to see what she was thinking. Didn't happen. It was just a fairy tale. It was a real letdown. I was looking forward to the conversation. I really, really was. Humanity is only 10,000 years old, according to 40 out of every 100 people in this country. Now, they're churchgoers, so they know that lets the last two, that means there's only 8,000 years of human development. And they hold to those beliefs despite no end of archaeological data, carbon-14 testing. I've heard it said. I've had it said to me as a child. When you ask them about things like actual carbon-14, that's just things that the devil put in the soil to confound the unbelievers. You got that? The story has a broader implication, however, because of the fact that it speaks to so many other things that happen in our otherwise inscrutable world. It explains how people can believe that adding to the deficit that they've been howling against for months, if not years, that suddenly that the adding to that deficit by monumental proportions can somehow be deemed to be good for the country and create jobs. Mother. It's one of those, where are we going and how did I get into this handbasket kind of moments, you know? Matt Osborne suggested a great little song to go with this. I agree. A little band called the Toadies. I Came from the Water. They might have, and you might have, and I might have. But Melvin and Marvelline, they didn't. And as regarding my interest in seeing what these numbers would be like in Europe, David Tennessee noting, by the way, America doesn't care about what Europe thinks. We care about all thinking peoples. You know, you, me, liberals. Decent people, progressives. But we ain't America, according to most media. And that is the damn truth. And in the chat room, Psychoticus Rex says, I'm glass half full myself. Don't think of it this way, Bob. Look how amazing those few percentage of Americans who don't believe in any kind of crazy are responsible for all American great achievements. Amazing what a small minority can do, both good and bad. And of course, there is there's this other point as well. Interesting that this data came out roughly at the same time that a poll from World Public Opinion came out. If you go to church, odds are you believe in crazy stuff. That's the Gallup poll. Right? If you're a Republican, there's a slight majority chance that you believe in crazy stuff, like an earth that's only 10,000 years old. Those are the odds. Well, the odds get even higher, apparently, with what happens to you when you watch Fox News. World Public Opinion is a group at the University of Maryland, and they've been studying what happens to the human brain when you watch Fox. Bless their hearts, they're a little bit behind the curves themselves, World Public Opinion, because our dear friend and horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner established years ago with a book called Fox Syndrome, Shared Psychotic Disorder, available for purchase to this day, that watching Fox does bad things to your mind. Let's see, what are you more likely to believe if you watch Fox? You believe that the stimulus caused job losses. 91% of those who watch Fox News almost every day. You're 12 points more likely to believe that. It's, of course, a lie. You're also likely to believe, to the tune of 72%, a whole, you know, nearly three-fourths, that the Affordable Care Act is going to worsen the deficit. And this more to the point because it's actually science, 60%, okay? Well over half. Most science, Fox viewers think that most scientists don't agree that climate change is occurring. And the one that's a real howler, if you're a Fox viewer, you think that you didn't get a tax cut from President Obama, even though you got a tax cut from President Obama. That means your taxes went down. But if you're a Fox viewer, you're more likely to believe that your own income taxes have gone up, even though when you look at them, they went down. Right. And then there's this one. If you're a Fox viewer, you're not quite sure if Obama's really American. Now, you take those two things and you sort of fold them together in a sort of sick, twisted, mentally unstable origami, and you understand very quickly why what happened on November 2nd happened. You understand why it is they can feel, because they don't think, they feel the way they do about the extension of the Bush tax cuts for the rich. Because, see, facts don't matter. They believe in talk, you know, gossipy gabons and chatty copperheads. And they believe that no matter how bad it gets, you know, one of these days, God's just going to set it all to rights. And, you know, they're nice and white. And why wouldn't God love white people, God being white and all? Mother. So much more stuff to get into this evening. I have a feeling we're going to have a very busy evening tomorrow. Very busy indeed. I want to thank you all for helping us to actually reach the halfway point of our fundraising for this month. Onward to victory, right? Because halfway means half the bills still have to be paid. So if you want to pop by headonradionetwork.com, click the tab that says contribute, and well, there's the PayPal button and the snail mail address for you to use at your leisure. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. Lottie in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy, my head writer David in Tennessee, our op-ed columnist Reverbo Cavalcade of Crazy at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, musician, webmaster, web designer, show host, amazing guy all the way around. and to Ben Birch as well at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Part of the reason we upped the fundraising on a monthly basis was to try to come up with the $500 that we need to pay Ben every month so that it's not quite as much of a burden on him. See, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Also, unending thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Don Blankenship has been named one of America's top 10 greediest men. He's like number 7 or something. Well, shining a spotlight on Don Blankenship is one of the things that Coal River Mountain Watch has done best of all. And their hard work bears real fruit. CRMW.net and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.